There is the J-shaped gulp, as Shane just did. There is just deadpan gulp. There's probably like a sensuous gulp. Where
I think that's my favorite.
Sensuous gulp.
Yeah. The following is a Mediocre Movies Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. We are talking about Veep in Silicon Valley tonight in our Veep-C / Silicon VP / whatever we end up naming the series. It's still up in the air. Still written in pencil rather than ink.
Yeah, I had something earlier. I completely forgot it now.
I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Sentner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
Hey, that's me.
We're going to...
Glad you already checked out, Brian.
So, Silicon Valley this week in an episode titled Customer Service. We are continuing our journey back through the series as the team at Pied Piper continues to look for funding and revisit some semi-familiar faces from their past. I did not recognize the previously shown character when he appeared on screen at all. But their plan, which, I don't know, maybe
who you,
Brian.
Who are you talking about?
Felcher or Melcher? Melcher?
Dan Melcher.
Okay. Definitely not Felcher. Sorry. Sorry about that.
What was he doing?
Ehrlich cheated with his wife.
Oh, yeah. I didn't recognize that.
Previously at Pied Piper. I mean, I didn't recognize him. I only knew that because they explicitly stated it in the episode. Right. They run into him, Richard and Ehrlich, as they're looking for funding for their project now that Gavin has flown the coop. Everyone wants to meet with them. But no one wants to fund them because he has left. The only people that will talk to him is Melcher's insurance company. He's the CTO, just as Brian is for the Munich Community Club. Although Shane is, there's some office politics. Let's just leave it at that.
For and, Chief, Shane's the technology officer?
I mean, we discussed before that we weren't going to talk about insurer company politics on the podcast in public. I feel like our shareholders will get spooked potentially. Shane
can be chief marketing officer, but I don't.
Again, just these are debates that are better had at our board meetings.
For next week, we can just
put a pin in it and focus on Silicon Valley and Veep.
Are you going to compete with me on CTO, Brian? Because one of us in this podcast remembered to turn down the volume on the microphone and the downstairs computer that we're recording on at least like four times in a row now.
That's the high quality work. Yeah.
Thank you. That's what CTO would do.
I bear no responsibility for any potential perturbations in our stock price and our market cap as these debates and these battles continue.
Can you have a negative market cap?
Yes, I think probably. Yeah, definitely. We've got like $20 in our savings account or something.
Yeah, like something.
Maybe
like
someone
that.
Can have a T-shirt, perhaps. Yeah. Maybe a club T-shirt. I mean, I wear it around Atlanta every so often.
Yeah, I love mine.
So the CTO that Melcher plays in the show, they are meeting with him because, and Brian, you can fill in here because I don't understand what they're talking about. The metaphor that they use is a condo that has yet to be built, pre-selling space in it. I don't understand the relationship.
It's not really any different than like Kickstarter. You're getting, it's like you're buying into something at a discount in hopes that it works out and would have cost you more later.
And there is a financial transaction taking place. It's not just Pied Piper getting access to the giant data in this insurance company.
Correct. They mentioned something about the, like, he mentions 25% discount or something like that. Yeah. There's money involved.
Okay. I was super unclear about that. It's not too terribly important because, like, the main point of their interaction with this insurance company is who's going to have sex with Melcher's fiance, Ehrlich. Has previously cuckolded poor Melcher twice, and his eyes immediately grow large at the potential for a third time once he realizes that Melcher and Liz, his fiance, who works with Melcher, once he realizes they're engaged. But Richard pushes Ehrlich off of this, and just wants to take control of this by himself. He doesn't want his dick. He doesn't want anyone's dick getting in the way of what he believes is the strength of the technology. And then, of course, he ends up having sex with Liz anyways.
None of this mattered in comparison to Richard describing adopting a new tech. And that's when Liz realizes, I don't know, what adult her current fiance is. And, like, it's Richard wooing her in her mind. But really, Richard's describing technology and not relationships or women. And it was perfect in the show.
Wholehearted.
Fantastic writing.
Wholehearted agree. That was great dialogue and great direction as far as like the cross cutting between Richard and Melcher wiping jelly donut or donut jelly off of his shirt while she's digesting what Richard is saying about, you know, not wanting to settle, not wanting to wake up every and drag yourself into working on something that you don't want to be working on.
What's your guys' favorite kind of donut?
Probably Creamfield. Creamfield. I like a good Boston cream donut.
Wow. What about you, Brian?
Just a regular yeast donut.
That is sad and depressing.
It really depends on where you get it, though. Like, the yeast donuts from the donut bank are really good. The yeast donuts from the grocery store are really bad.
Yeah. What about the Entenmann chocolate-covered ones? With, like, the yellow cake inside?
Those are so bad.
I love those things. Like, you just put them in the fridge. It's like a comfort food, like... I used to eat, you know, like four of those at a time when I was a teenager.
So you have to remember, John and I grew up in a town with a place literally called the Donut Bank. I never realized that was a weird name until I told it to somebody. No.
Is it a weird name?
I don't think it's that weird.
It's just been a part of my life donuts? Forever. Family like frequented the Donut Bank a whole lot. They didn't branch out into Hobstad. They were an Evansville thing.
I mean, there's a king of burgers. Come on.
Who did he depose?
Yeah.
Who's the heir? Yeah. Is it Hardee's?
I mean,
this is nonsense.
He doesn't even like he owns that land. Most of those are leases.
Burger King side fact.
Please.
The first Burger King is in Central Illinois, and they have a rule where Burger King franchise cannot be within 20 miles of the original. They're unrelated to each other, but the original owns like the trademark. I have no idea how all that works out.
They have the original Chick-fil-A down here in Hapeville on the way to
Are you saying Hapeville?
Might as well. Hape. Hape with a P.
Oh, I heard the T in there as well.
It's Hapeville, and it's also like a sit-down restaurant. It's really weird. It's called the Dwarf House.
Like a classic Pizza Hut? That kind of thing?
Yeah.
What Chick-fil-A do you go to that you can't sit down at?
No, I mean like you get served. Like.
Oh, okay.
There's also a really mean parking attendant across the street at one of the bank / job recruiting places / background check places that I learned that you can't park in the fucking parking lot for one of the things. Anyway, that was a $100 mistake. My favorite, I'm actually with you, Brian, my favorite donuts are yeast.
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, I like just the classic.
Just the glazed?
Actually,
boring ass donuts.
I don't go for
they put
glaze.
Bacon and pistachios on donuts now.
Those are overrated.
I had the donut slider with strawberries inside, fresh strawberries. It was a yeast donut cut in half with like the sugar. And yeah, it's like a regular yeast donut with like this like a little sugar and nice and greasy on the outside. Oh man, that's delicious.
You know who likes donuts probably? Keenan Feldspar.
Yeah.
Because he's got man tits on top of his paunch.
Yes.
He is a brilliant casting coup on the part of Silicon Valley, played by a version of Haley Joel Osment, who looks exactly like Fat Mac from the season of Always Sunny in Philadelphia when Mac was fat. That guy has a Academy Award nomination from when he was 10 years old. And now he is a giant bearded man who looks like he's having a lot of fun. Good for him. I'm happy for Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah. It's crazy how, like, good-looking little kids grow up to be monsters.
I feel like he had a rough patch, you know, like a child star-type rough patch.
Did he? I don't think so at all. I think he's pretty well-adjusted.
I think he got, like, a drunk driving or arrested with pot or something before he was 21. On top of the casting, just the perfect name of Keenan Feldspar fits perfectly in the show, especially when paired with an Ehrlich Bachman. A high quality writing all around on this week's episode of Silicon Valley.
Absolutely.
Ehrlich gets in touch with him while he is contemplating the sadness of the current state of his life. He's eating day-old muffins, surrounded in tacky swag from Monica and Lori's new tech firm. They have just emphatically rejected him from a position in their new firm.
I loved Lori's bluntness with Ehrlich. I know people like Ehrlich. Like, most of the internet thinks he's the best character and is devastated he's leaving. But I was glad that someone was honest with him very bluntly.
I don't get that either, like the Ehrlich love. I think the show relies on him a little too much, maybe. I do think at the same time they get the balance right as far as making sure that he is seen as a buffoon who cannot help but fail. So I appreciate that.
Right. Like, I saw this post on, Reddit, and it was referring to the middle out, mm-hmm. 3 minutes. And it, like, talked about how Ehrlich was a huge part of that. He had very little to do with that. He just got hit in the face. And he was going to be the one to jerk the guys off. But other than that, he wasn't.
Like, did he perhaps part of it. Propose the jerking off of everyone in the audience?
It was sort of like a group thought because they talked about he did say if I have to like jerk off all 800 guys in the room, and then it led to two at a time and four at a time. And
they do occasionally they'll occasionally give him a glimpse of competence.
Right.
Like it was either the season 3 finale, or the season 2 finale when he like pins his hair back and dives into coding with the rest of the team. I thought that was like a big win for him. Like, you see that he's not just a useless money man. He actually is a talented coder himself.
Right. Yeah, it would have been nice to see more of that.
Yeah, but instead he spent all of last season taking advantage of Big Head, which is fine. Big Head's another character that gets on my nerves. Just
where's
the way
he been?
That's a great question. He's been showing Johnny Mnemonic and virtuosity to his class at Stanford.
About to get Professor of the Year.
I'm sure his like student comments at the end of his class are going to be through the roof.
I mean, they all came up with an idea out of it. They're all going to be wealthy.
Maybe he'll be introducing the speaker, if not being the speaker himself at graduation. Who could protest Big Head?
True. Nobody's walking out on him.
I'm not so harsh on Ehrlich because he's kind of a natural foil for a lot of plot points too, that gets everything going or forces people to make decisions one way or the other. And he's just part there. His bravado is what does it. It's just consistent character traits.
There's been a tension in the show, I think, for a long time between like the nerds like Richard and the money people like Gavin, who don't have the kind of bullied past that Richard talked about last week with Bryce the Blood Boy. And I, or like has a foot in both worlds. I can imagine him being just the biggest nerd amongst his like coding group in high school or the AV club in high school or whatever is the nerdy.
Gavin was probably the same way as well.
That's true.
Now he has a garage in his garage.
When he's not like flying around to bed or whatever, whatever he does now. So Feldspar, it turns out, is a big deal VR guy. And Ehrlich, again, much like Big Head falling into success, Ehrlich brings this huge catch into Monica and Lori's firm in exchange for a job. So presumably he'll be working there in the future, unless Feldspar is revealed to be a fraud. And as happy as Haley Joel Osment played him, as cheerful, as vivacious, I think he's probably the real deal.
Yeah, I think mostly I'm looking forward to a lot more Lori and Ehrlich.
Yes. Yeah, that should pay some dividends. Back to Richard in the insurance company. Everything works out more or less here as well. The fiance is disgusted by Richard's terrible sexing. And she just wants to get the deal approved and never speak of this again.
I'm going to jump in here. When Richard describes the sexing. He says it's like two wild animals, and then Jared says, "I bet it was magnificent."
Yeah, it's so great.
Richard's got his own hype man living in his garage.
Mm-hmm.
He's very supportive.
People aren't supposed to click their teeth together that much. That is awful when that happens. It is so awful.
I don't understand what her problem was with Richard saying gulp when she took her top off. That sounds like a fun joke to lessen potential tension in a romantic entanglement. I think that was the right thing for him to do, and I don't understand why she took offense to that.
Women love to be made laugh. Like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Not take it seriously.
Yeah, like there's all this, societal pressure, perhaps, to be ashamed of your body, and Richard is just making a fun joke that you shouldn't be, and he's instead wowed by the beautiful sight in front of him. How else could you have taken that?
Yeah,
Richard, I'm with.
This is why you were voted Atlanta's best lover. 2 years running.
The Claremont Lounge really they threw me a big bash. A banner that said gulp and a smaller banner that said, "What have we done?" Surely this is the best decision that's ever been made at the Claremont Lounge.
Have you been to Claremont Lounge?
Fuck no.
Okay. Brian, I'm assuming you have not.
We have compared it in a previous podcast to the house that Scarlett Johansson's character killed people in Under the Skin.
Yeah.
So that's not a ringing endorsement.
Fair. I haven't been either, so. I used to send people there, though, so.
To have their skin removed by aliens, presumably, and shot out meat sluice.
It was when I was bartending. It would be like a random Wednesday or Thursday night. Like, come on, like businessmen from out of town. Like, what is there to do in Atlanta on Friday or Thursday night? I'm like,
what a crazy question that is, first of all.
Yeah, but you need to go to the Claremont Lounge, sir. Like, you will not regret it. I would send people there all the time. Like, I'll get the cab.
And they were never heard from again.
Yeah. Certainly didn't come back and tip me extra.
You kept getting fruit baskets showing up on your front door with no explanation.
Just covered in stripper dust. And stripper dust at the Claremont Lounge is the occasional dust.
Single ominous drop of blood on the wrapping plastic. Yeah. We're sponsored this week by the Claremont Lounge in Atlanta. Stop by. You probably won't contract a fatal disease and die shortly thereafter, or be ordered.
Get your tetanus shot updated.
I mean, that's just good advice.
Yeah.
We're also sponsored this week by the DTaP vaccine, whoever makes that. We're really upping our sponsor game. I'd like to thank our CMO for that one. However, I don't want to put my finger on the scale as far as who gets to become the CTO, but, I mean, the CMO is bringing it. Pharmaceutical, entertainment industries, we're really branching out. I'm proud of our progress. So
everybody who jumped ship from Fox News is headed our way.
Hooray! So the last part of Silicon Valley, the C plot, Dinesh and Guilfoyle, while testing out the Pied Piper program, they get the data switched on their phones, and they briefly reenact a Cold War dynamic of mutually assured destruction, where if one person looks at the data on one person's phone, the other person will surely look at the other person's data. And various people get slapped. It all works out.
Yeah. So if this were to happen to any of us, like, would you have anything that bad on your phone?
Would I know?
Yeah,
I would be totally fine with that. Someone might find a picture I took by accident of like a floor as I'm trying to figure out how to shut off the camera that I will never use and accidentally turned on.
There are certain points in my life where there probably be compromising stuff on my phone, I would imagine.
I just don't. Now it's just pictures
of babies.
Yeah. My crying kids.
They actually have pictures of baby poop. And rashes on body parts and stuff on my phone, they'd be like, this person might need to be arrested. But
I have no doubt someone somewhere, when photo labs were still a thing, like did exactly that. Like took a picture of the weird rash on their kid's butt. I don't know. Like, that's then like, the police knocked on their door.
Yeah.
Or the surprisingly large shit that their kid took in their training potty.
Yeah, the thing was massive.
It's, intestines are long.
Yeah, I mean, how did it, the width?
I mean, it's, I would imagine it's expands. Smaller inside of a person, yeah. And then once it is allowed to expand, it will.
Hits the air, just goes out.
It's like. Conversation.
Do you have pictures of baby poop on your phone?
We took pictures like the kid's rashes. Actually, Jane had an infection that we would take a picture of repeatedly to see if it was growing or shrinking. It was very helpful for our surgeon, actually.
For your surgeon?
Yeah, we were keeping an eye on it. And then
he was like, "Hey, before you put me under, we look at this picture of my daughter's rash." Like, oh, that looks fine. All right.
We were butchering.
10, 9, and out.
And they look great, Brian.
Thanks. I try. She had an infection that was spreading rapidly, and we had to keep track of it. We had to get it surgically removed.
We have a friend who had a MRSA infection. Or like their kid had a MRSA infection.
Right. Kids are disgusting.
Yes. And I believe that also had to be surgically removed.
Speaking of disgusting, Jeff's got a stomach virus right now and has diarrhea. So we're at the park today, and he stopped swinging the bat properly. I was like, Jeff usually tries to rip the ball. I'm like, what's going on, man? Are you okay? He's like, I'm fine. I kept pitching him, kept half swinging. And I was like, okay, run the base. He's like, no way. As soon as he moved, he shit his pants.
Kids. That sounds so great.
Welcome to a kids cast.
John, what would you like to add?
It's just not going to come up. like that decision is being written in stone the longer I live here. The kids here are fine. They're not hateful by any means, but pass. Hard pass. So, real world similarities for this week. Just a couple of small things, as usual for Silicon Valley, when I have anything for this. And you guys feel free to add if you'd like to. But Guilfoyle on his phone, Dinesh finds a save the date for an Anton LaVey fun run. LaVey, of course, is the founder of the Church of Satanism.
Hold on, you say of course. I had no idea. I heard the fun run part and I thought that was funny, but I didn't know who LaVey was.
I mean, I assumed it was something like that.
It's the only cause that Guilfoyle would get behind. It's like he's a well documented Satanist.
Right.
And this is a church that I would define as a group of delightful trolls, I think, these days. Like when the state of Alabama, perhaps, wants to put the Ten Commandments on their front lawn. Here come the Church of Satan wanting to put a statue of a goat right next to it.
I feel like this is
And then everyone church. Retreats and the Ten Commandments statue goes away. And they are doing the work of civil libertarians everywhere. So,
I feel like this is like the perfect group for JR. Our group.
I could see that. Yeah, it's just contrarian. Yeah. They're a contrarian group, very much so. I'm not going to be joining the Church of Satan anytime soon, but I salute their work. I don't speak for the MMC when I say this. I am only speaking for myself.
Yeah, as the chief marketing officer, yes.
Okay, I'm undoing all of your good work with getting
all these new sponsors,
with getting the manufacturer of the DTaP vaccine on our side. We'll see how they feel about
it.
I mean, pharmaceutical companies surely are on the side of the separation of church and state. So I think they would also be fans of the Church of Satan. You can take that however you like, depending on your political leanings, pharmaceutical companies and the Church of Satan and their relationship to each other.
Why haven't you got a job in pharmaceuticals lately?
I don't know. I feel like this explication of the potential shared similarities between these two entities will only help my chances.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like John Kissel, he's got our pulse down.
I will be sure to tag this episode "Pharmaceuticals Satanism." The other real world similarity: has anyone used a VR headset?
No. My theory is that VR headsets are this elaborate plot that everyone else is in on to finally get me to put one on to laugh at me.
Here is what I've heard from every person that has used one, and I have not used one. I thought they were going to be stupid, and then I used it, and it changed my life, or something to that effect.
You didn't even let me answer, because I've used multiple VR headsets.
Okay. Would you put yourself in that?
No, I would put myself in that. I thought they were going to be awesome, and it was just as awesome as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
I just can't afford one. Nor is the software for them.
I know the Google phone is only like $90.
The little cardboard thing?
Well, no, the cardboard ones are like $10. You can get a free one occasionally at your at the AT&T store. Like I have one that I just slide my phone in, and the way it works out, like so, my house is listed on the MLS right now.
You can also, the multiple listing service.
Major League Soccer. It's listed for all Major League Soccer players.
You're automatically as successful as a quarter of the teams in the MLS.
And so anyway, there's like pictures of the house. My realtor has a thing now where it takes a virtual tour. So you can, it's weird, stand in my living room and, I mean, you could be standing anywhere, but I was standing in my living room looking at a three-dimensional view of my living room. But it's really neat.
Do a lot of people in Mahomet, Illinois take advantage of that technology?
I can't imagine there's that many people who use it, but it works really well. So it's sort of in its infancy software-wise. And I've played games on it, like other people's, and they're incredibly amusing. It's not cheap at the moment.
But you're bullish. If you get the opportunity, give it a shot.
In the very long run, yes. Like here's, I'm imagining, like if you offered me if I had a 3D headset, virtual reality headset, and I could rent like the latest movie for $15 instead of going to the theater, I would have like absolutely rented Get Out for $15-$20 instead of going to the theater because I have kids and it's hard to leave.
Sure.
Ooh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
So I think the movie watching experience is incredible.
It's not necessarily that you are walking around in the movie; it's that there's just no peripheral vision.
Right. Maybe. It's just you. It's you in the movie and your headphones, and so you're like at one with the movie. It's fantastic.
And like the headset itself isn't like even putting 3D glasses on bugs the shit out of me.
The headset. I mean, I only watched something for like 15 minutes and it didn't bug me, but they're getting lighter and better.
Yeah, you have a very strong neck, though.
I do.
It's Brian's strong neck, Hartman.
Both your kids have it, too. It's crazy. It's genetics, you know?
There we go. Got to carry that giant noggin around. You got to have a strong neck.
I have a real world similarity.
Please.
Well, kind of loosely based, but I have definitely dropped a phone in the toilet before. I didn't flush it. I may have been drinking, I may have been puking, and I may have dropped my phone while I was texting right in the toilet.
This is like Trainspotting-esque.
Is yeah.
The mental picture you're painting for
me. This is 1506 Evansville.
Oh my gosh.
Of course.
Oh my gosh.
I quickly snatched my phone out of there, drunkenly took it apart, passed out.
Drunkenly took it apart?
Took the whole thing apart, actually, everything I could take apart. Pass out, put it back together the next morning.
All right.
That shit worked for another 3 years.
Wow.
I still have it. It's like a little Samsung one piece thing. It's great. I used to be able to text on that thing while driving without looking at it, which is a lot safer
that's like.
Than texting and driving and looking at it like I do now.
Yeah, like the keyboard that has recently been added to my phone in a tremendous technological leap forward has certainly made me a more dangerous driver.
Yeah.
Like having the ABC texting on my flip phone.
Yeah.
I had that shit down.
And it's just math.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Yeah.
But not as hard as looking down and looking up saying, oh, I'm not that close to us, am I?
It's really not as hard as cleaning vomit out of a phone. That is truly impressive.
I'm not sure if I actually cleaned the vomit out.
Yeah. I left that open for you to push back on.
Well, I appreciate that.
My assertion there.
Appreciate you being
so if you, if like vomit in your phone, as it dries, does it just lose its, I don't know, not infection, like whatever would, well, I guess whatever would spread infection. The germs, do those just go away when it dries?
Probably.
Yeah, a lot of those bacteria are living
germs,
in stomach.
Well, I mean, germs, there's not a tremendous amount of bacteria in a person's stomach necessarily, yeah. But there are certainly germs that are sloughed off on the way up. Yeah. Like your esophagus is going to be lousy with germs.
Yeah. Especially that time in my life.
But I mean, if they're locked inside of a phone, it's not necessarily conducive to like growing to multiplying bacteria.
Like how long until they're just gone though?
I mean, bacteria are pretty impressive. They can fly through space, form some spores, and just wait it out.
1506 was a great place where it's like bacteria,
yeah,
viruses,
and spores.
Live,
yeah.
To live, let's be fair.
Okay. Favorite moments. I mentioned the introduction of Kenan Feldspar. I just had a big dumb smile on my face as jolly Haley Joel Osment, now weighing 5 of his characters in The Sixth Sense, strolls straight up into the camera. Delightful. Delightful. He'll be a wonderful addition to the show.
I liked at the beginning, they started strong when Ehrlich misunderstood the statement about pissing in everyone's car.
That was a good scene.
No, it was a good quality, funny start. I feel like they haven't started with a laugh in a while.
Yeah, we didn't even mention Russ charging up to the house with another timeless 90s angry rock song.
Yeah, the song selection is great. It wasn't my favorite scene. I don't know, like, I felt it was kind of forced every last time.
He's a tough character. And he has no impact on the rest of the episode.
Yeah, none.
Maybe this is like dropping a pebble in a pond and the ripples are going to show up in the next 2 or 3 episodes. Like, maybe he fucks them down the road.
Yeah, which is what they're good at, which I would have no doubt that that's what they're setting up. But the gag for the song alone is great.
Yes, I expect like better than Ezra, perhaps, the next time we see him. Or is that too soft for him?
That's too soft.
Okay. Yeah. God damn it. Seether? Seether? That's a band, yeah. Right? Or Stained?
Yeah,
Stained would be a really good one.
Oh, yeah.
System just of a Down?
Just look at D-Nox's CD collection, I think. It'd probably.
He's a big Alanis Morissette fan, Dave K. is. So, I mean, we're in the 90s milieu still, but maybe not to the same level of intensity, of fake intensity, of your Papa's Roach. Of your Stains, that kind of thing.
My favorite moment was just the description of their sex from the woman's point of view, and just like when she's like, "Yeah, you say gulp out loud."
Just, again, I don't understand.
It's great. It's great.
I've got my Claremont Lounge Best Lover Trophy to prove that I know what I'm talking about.
Again,
I feel like gulp is a totally reasonable thing to break any potential tension. So, I mean, for me, that was just. Like a documentary, basically. Like it's Thursday. It's 11 o'clock, and you say gulp when a woman takes her shirt off. These are facts.
Cool.
So moving on to Veep, this week in an episode titled "Blurb," Selena gets what should be a big moment with her portrait unveiling, with her manuscript moving forward. In the previous episode, she found a way in.
Hold on
her.
Just a second.
Yes.
We're going to talk about my new stance on Selena. So given my obvious dislike of Selena.
Sure. Well established.
Right. And like she's the protagonist, I guess. I decided this week that I was going to change my entire view of the episode and actively root against the protagonist for the first time. And it changed the show entirely. It made it semi-enjoyable compared to the first 6 episodes.
In that scenario, who are you rooting for? Or is that even... Does that
I'm
even
rooting for...
It
does. I don't even care. I'm rooting for anything bad that can happen to Selena for her to get what she deserves.
I guess, like, is she the worst person on the show? Like, if we followed around any other character in this show's world... Would they not be exactly as bad?
I don't think everyone's as bad as she is.
Who is better than she is?
Kent.
Kent. Yes.
Richard.
Richard has. He's powerless,
Catherine,
and will continue to be powerless.
Marjorie,
Catherine.
Gary.
Mike.
Dan. Amy.
Let's
the
preface.
Only people as bad as her. Is Jonah.
But he's funny.
He single-handedly shuts down the government in this episode.
Right.
Which was glorious.
Which is something
not for no
shutdown.
Reason. For no reason.
Well, he didn't get invited
the
to the party. He had
female
good...
genitalia. Like,
can we not talk about that this week, Shane?
I think every other person given power in the show, like it's one. One thing to root for Richard. Richard is powerless. If the person at the center of the show that all these other characters rotate around, if that person has to have power, I feel like every other character would make the, like Tom James, Furlong, of course, the Speaker of the House that we briefly see in this episode, they would all make the exact same decision.
Yeah, I would agree.
It just happens to be Selena.
But yeah, she's supposed to be the protagonist, so it's kind
of... We just get these tiny windows into her psychology.
What?
Hold that on, I think still make her compelling as a...
What other show is the main character that you're supposedly rooting for as awful as she is? You've seen so much more TV than I have. I want to hear at least two examples.
Archer?
Yes, I think Archer is one. Although I've fallen behind on that show. I haven't watched like the last two seasons. But that character, as repulsive as he is, much like Selena, stays compelling because you get a sense of where he comes from and his various neuroses. Always Sunny, especially, where they invite the viewer to root against the characters. I think it's totally fine for someone to root against Selena.
Yeah, I think I need to tell Blair to do the same because she's really kind of down the show right now as well. And I think I am as well. Last week kind of ruined me. But I've also been going back. I finished season one. No, I have one more episode going in season one. And it's a different show. It's a completely different show. They're different characters. There's competency.
Gary wasn't awful.
And like in that first season, she is powerless. She has nothing to do. And therefore, she's no more or less awful than she is now. Just no one's looking at her. No one's giving her responsibilities to fuck up.
I think she's more awful. I don't know. I think she was. But she's also like completely incompetent now. She can't get shit done. In first season, like she's moving towards getting something done. She has goals and shit.
I mean, she has goals now. It's just her goals are totally self-serving.
Right. I mean, they're self-serving to begin with. Like, yeah. She's always been a selfish
person. They are only self-serving. Like, at least if the family's first bill got passed, potentially somebody could have been helped by that. It would have made her look better. Or the Tibet deal, which you haven't seen the fifth season when all this happens. Or the fourth season when the family's first bill comes up. But... The point has always been to make her look as great as she possibly can, which is why this episode is such an excellent representation of that, with like her picture that's going to hang in the White House for as long as there is a White House, so we'll call it 15 years.
That picture of her, the thing with the neck was really funny. I didn't really care about the chair, but her neck did look really bad.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We're all over the place so far with this episode of
Veep. Yeah, I think it was... It's talking about it. It's hard. I don't know. It's just not. I don't know if I would spend my time 30 minutes of my week watching this at this point.
Wow.
I mean, it's good. I'm not saying it's bad, but there's other stuff out there.
It's so funny.
Is it?
It's not as funny as the previous season, which I thought was one of the all-time comedy seasons. It was my favorite show of 2016, but it's still really funny. Like there are the joke density is so high.
It's so absurd. It's just at this point, like I can't buy in. The first season, there's a plot. There's stuff going on. I mean, there's plots now, but like there's something relatable to it. And now it's Tim and Eric absurd, but not it's absurd enough.
Early, we're looking at something like that we can understand and we can relate to, how the government works, you know, political horse trading, pork barrel spending, you know, the dysfunction of government. And now we're simply following a lady around who's trying to build her library. That is not a compelling show. This is how Jonah has become the best character, is because it gets back to shutting down the government and, you know, trading everything you stand for, break up a new religion because your girlfriend told you to. These things are funny. Watching her build a library incompetently is really just annoying.
I think it's hard for me to separate those two things because Jonah eventually is going to be done with public service in quotation marks, and he'll be consumed with his post-government life when he's out of the spotlight as well. Like, if this series, if the show is about anything, it's about attempting to make a mark on history and that being a complete fool's errand. History doesn't care about you. History's going to judge you in 100 years when you were long dead and have no input on it in the first place. Like, there were plenty of shitty presidents before Selena, and there will be plenty of shitty presidents after Selena. Like, if it's a glimpse into who runs for government, it's a great thing to be interested in public service, I suppose. But the amount of arrogance necessary to think that you could do that kind of job, even to have a job like Jonah's, where he is representing 50,000, 100,000, a million people, that he would be their best avatar, that he would be their best champion, is a level of hubris that is practically a mental illness. Much right, less to be the governor of a state or a senator or the president who's in charge of, you know, the free world.
Right. And those things are all amusing to watch, though. Selena's current story is not amusing to watch for someone who is simply watching TV for amusement.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in that it's easier to get locked into other aspects of the show when it's not just about a character who would want that level of praise and leadership. But once that praise and leadership goes away, then what are you left with is a different show. So I think you're right there. It becomes more of a character piece than a satire, where like it very much used to be a satire, and now it's very much about Selena and how she is adjusting to this new part of her life. So root against her. I mean, I can't push back against that.
I'm gonna have a hard time. I can't do that.
Even like Seinfeld, like you root against those characters too.
So there's like a long tradition. So. I don't think you root against them. Maybe, I mean, kind of George, but not. I don't. Even rewatching those shows, I'm never actively rooting.
You root for George to a certain point, and eventually you're like, God damn it, George. But every episode, you're like, all right, come on, George, let's get it together.
Right.
Oh, and man, the current guy in charge of Veep is a former writer on Seinfeld also. So there is a connection between those two shows. So into the meat of this episode, again, entitled Blurb. Things, as so often happen in an episode of Veep, they start well for Selena and then slowly fall into shit. Like, she's getting pressure on her manuscript. She has plans for a multi-volume Stages of Her Life type thing, but the publisher has no interest in that. He just wants to get to the meat of her political career and more or less let that be the end of it. So to spice that up, she decides to include a relationship with Tom James. They have a big blow up after she goes to ask him for permission to include their relationship, even though like the level of psychological warfare between her and Tom James in this instance, like she knows even as she goes to ask him that she's going to include it in the book. He probably knows that too, and then maybe hadn't thought about including it in his book. But then once she goes to meet him and they have a nice meeting together on the surface, he's like, holy shit, she's going to include it in her book, and I have to include it in mine. So he steals that from her. He gets to tell his version of the story. That paints him in the best light, as opposed to Selena painting herself in the best light. And that continues into her portrait unveiling, which, as Brian, you mentioned, her neck is fucked up. The chair that her ex-husband banged the painter on is included in the portrait. She is
Mike sat in that chair.
Mike sat in and slept in that chair. She is further humiliated at the ceremony as it is happening in conjunction with a government shutdown. So her caviar refreshments, or canapes, whatever, are replaced by fun-sized Snickers bars and folding chairs instead of the Kennedy china. And she gives a terrible speech about how these presidents on the wall had their successes, and as we remember them for, but they also had their shitty days. And no matter what, my portrait's going to hang here. Yeah. That's her speech.
Okay, so my least favorite part of this episode was Montez's lack of speech. It was just, come on. It's too much.
I like her as a character. It would have been nice to hear from her a little bit.
Like, I thought, like you don't have to take everything from Selena. Like, everything, even the speech, well, I have to go deal with this. Like, no one would say that. It was it was just the writer shitting on the character.
There was a fresh government shutdown.
Then she wouldn't have been there. She would have just, the whole thing would have been canceled or something like that. But
yeah,
not, she wouldn't have gotten up and said, I have a speech, but I'm not going to say it. Because this shutdown, like, it was just like too much. Like, this is why it's just too fucking much shows right now.
So you sympathize with Selena in that moment?
I guess I do.
Even as she had her terrible episode last week.
I guess I just.
I think you give Montez the speech and then have Selena screw it up afterwards.
Yeah, it just would seem like it's going out of their way just to shit on her. Which is unnecessary. I guess that kind of goes against my... I'm pro-bully, so...
famously pro-bully. Again, that will factor into the race for CTO, but you're not there. I feel like an IT guy needs to crack a whip and be a jerk, as all IT guys are everywhere.
In my experience, IT guys don't really bully, they just don't answer emails.
They just assume so much of the person asking a question. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't ask the question if I knew the answer. Stop judging me.
I think the thing for a tech person is you have to have a Reddit account, like actively read Reddit.
All right. I think that's what's called a humble brag on Brian's part. Just for lobbying. Saying,
it just seems like there's a lot of people who talk about being an IT on that website.
As an IT person, I think Hillary Clinton's campaign had that guy killed, for example. So those two things are totally related to each other. So, mention the shutdown. Based on Jonah not being invited to this unveiling, he spends the entire episode angry about this. He is rejected by Montez herself for getting to be invited to the unveiling. Apparently, he's a big muckety-muck. Now, the head of the Jeffersons, where he can just be around the West Wing. And he rallies the Jeffersons to shut down the government out of spite, and they all vote against raising the debt ceiling, and us, the fun-sized Snickers, are brought out.
Man, we missed a great good opportunity at the beginning of this episode to say, maybe we should call our show the Rough Riders.
Fuck, that's a good name.
Yeah.
No. We're the Medica Movie Club. No. We'd have to do so much rebranding.
I love, there's two things in this, my favorite parts in this is the beginning. I don't know how you left this out of your notes, because I thought it was the second best part to the shutdown, was Jonah's dysfunctional conversion to Judaism and messing up just the most basic concepts.
This hat won't fit on my yarmulke. being concerned about how he'll be able to see his dog in dog heaven if Jews don't believe in him.
That was sad
day.
Awesome.
For Jonah.
Jonah is like, we keep going back to it. Like, my inner contrarian is like, don't like Jonah's, like,
he's Jonah too, stuff he's so too much. Dumb.
But he's the good satire. Like, he's great. He's playing it that, like, that character's being honest. Like, that character thinks he's going to go see his dog in heaven because he's so narcissistic. And bad shit happens to him, but good shit happens to him as well. Whereas Selena, just bad shit happens to her right now. That's it.
I think even his dumbing down is earned. It's because he has only increased in power as the series has gone on. And with that increase in power he is ratified in how he has viewed himself. Like, everything he has done has led to where he is now. So therefore, I don't need to improve myself. I don't need to swallow these stupid statements that swirl in my head and push those down and not say them. I can say them now because I'm clearly doing something right, and it's maybe almost, they're correct.
I mean, how believable is that when we have a president like Trump right now who definitely is very measured in how he speaks?
Yeah.
Or is that someone else I'm thinking
it's
of?
Everything he has done has led him here, so why should I worry about self-improvement now? I'm president and you're not.
Yeah.
As the president of the United States said to a journalist in recent months.
Yeah.
Direct
quote. I don't see Jonah as that, because Jonah's rise to power, it sort of ebbed and flowed. Like, he was an assistant, and then he was nothing, and he got, he was assistant to the vice president for all. He went up and down, and then all of a sudden, he falls into this thing, and he's always had this hubris about him. I don't think it's because of his power. I think this is just how he has always been. He's always thought he was right.
I think that doubt has always been there. And it's probably still there now. Like, he knows who his uncle is. It's just a smaller and smaller voice in the back of his head. Like, stop being so proud and hubristic. You know why you're here. The voice that says that in Jonah's brain is just whispering now.
Yeah.
Probably at this point, I guess, fuck it. You are a congressman.
Yeah.
You got the Jeffersons.
He's leading the Jeffersons. He's moving on up. Moving into the world of fake news, Dan and his new co-host, Bree, I think is her name, they are docked by focus groups for lacking the chemistry that he and previous co-host Jane had, which is odd because Dan and Bree are having sex, whereas Dan and Jane were not.
The best part of all of that, because it was really stupid storyline, is when they talk about you've got a note in here about doing our laundry wrong, and I've got a note in here about them creating a sex offender registry for dogs, and it's about time.
The news the news parody on Veep continues to be top-notch. Like, just like you mentioned, not liking this plot line, but of course there are focus groups dedicated to determining whether or not a news team has chemistry with each other, because that's certainly important when you're finding out what's going on in the world. Are the two people telling it to me? Do they like each other? Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
I'd like to, as a good side character, is the producer of the morning show.
He is going to pull his mask off and reveal that he has been manipulating everything at one point in the future.
When Dan and Bree are petting each other and they show his face and he's got this squirmy, gross look on his face, that was really good.
It makes so much sense that Dan is into her that they can't, because they can't. There's no actual chemistry there. There's nothing there. They're two just fake people.
Yeah. She's marrying a Yankee soon.
I think, I feel like this show has been the tale of episodes going forward. I think that's a great idea. They just do a little recap or a little a hint at what's coming based on the events of the previous episode. We just check in with Dan and Bree and they talk about, this is a quote from the end of the episode after the shutdown, "Wall Street is in what we've been told not to call a panic. Up next, are we doing our laundry wrong?" No. Just nonsense, bullshit, distractions. I fucking hate this kind of thing. It just bugs the shit out of me. I mean, the President of the United States said that in a government document of record that will be preserved as surely as Selena's portrait will be preserved. So that's relevant. What is the president talking about in this instance? Everything the president says is a matter of public record. You got to save that shit. So, all right. Lincoln Douglas debates. Well, I mean, he wasn't president when he said that. Gettysburg Address, inaugural addresses, JFK throughout history. Confifi.
Confifi.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it? Confifi?
Who fucking knows? Who knows? Who knows?
Now we're the time.
Word of the year, I'm sure, by Merriam-Webster. Just calling it.
Good call.
So, real world similarities for this episode of Veep. We haven't really had a pathetic president like Selena in my lifetime, I feel. We've had old W, but, I mean, he served for a whole 8 years. And, I mean, in contrast, I couldn't even tell you how many times I've heard liberals say how much they pine for the days of George W. Bush.
yes.
I guess the closest comparison would be Gerald Ford, who's the most notable thing he did was pardon Nixon. Nixon, who, also sucked as president, but he had several major accomplishments in his own
right. He established the EPA.
He did a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
He also hated Jews and blacks, but here and there, and he recorded it himself saying as much. And he did really, terrible, terrible stuff as well. Sabotage Vietnamese peace talks, for example, here and there. I think Ford is the closest resemblar to Selena? Like, what's it like? What was it like for him to go to future unveilings as an 18-month president who didn't necessarily do a whole lot and stand next to your Reagans, your H.W. Bushes? What was his presidential unveiling like? Like, I just, this is where my sympathy for Selena comes in. It's like she still has to go around in public as this complete failure of a politician. And it's such a strange way to view a president, because we've had a series of two-term presidents going back for more or less as long as we've been cognizant of what's going on in the world.
Like, one of Montez's people this episode was like, yeah, you had to talk to President Myers' people. And like, that's right, President Myers. She's still referred to as President Myers. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. And even like in the cold, like going back further, I feel like you have to go back to like Hoover or Harding to find like presidents that are just reviled. But I mean, Hoover didn't get the reevaluation that W is getting, and he's only getting a reevaluation because the current president is so terrible. It's interesting. It's interesting to me. Like, there's a picture. There's a picture of like the five living presidents at some point during Obama's tenure, and it's like H.W., W., Obama, and Clinton, like standing pretty close to each other, and then Carter is standing like 3 feet away, like clearly not in the group. And I mean, those people are talking to each other, not like they're on Veep or anything, but they're talking to each other as people that have gone through this more or less the same thing. And surely there is some kind of familiarity there.
Yeah, and Carter.
Are they all like, just laughing about Carter standing over there by himself, looking around, slowly realizing that I'm being frozen out here and someone is taking a picture?
Maybe they all have peanut allergies.
Maybe. And he's made all his clothes out of peanuts now.
Yeah, probably genetically part peanut. I don't really understand how genetics works, but...
Sure. the talk of the debt ceiling brings back horrifying memories of the Congress after the 2010 elections, where it was just like every month a new fucking discussion about, is the debt ceiling going to be raised? Is the government going to shut down? Are we going to default on our debt?
Can we remind our dozens of listeners that the Republican Congress actually did shut us down and nearly got us to default on our debt?
They did. I forget when exactly that was. Was that 2013?
I don't know.
But there was that awful period where it was just like the basic function of government was at stake. Instead of like nibbling around the edges or talking about policy, it was, are we even going to do this anymore? Except for that one instance, it always worked itself out like at the last minute. Like, overnight talks have produced a one-month continuation bill. Exhausting.
Yeah, and they summed that up really quick in this episode where they had the Speaker of the House and the Minority Whip, like, say mean things about each other and then just, like, trade a couple of things. And they
exactly.
Happy to up the ceiling again.
Yeah, and I think... Go ahead.
You want to talk real-world similarity. The Speaker of the House in Veep has a slight orange tint to him. Much like John Boehner of years past.
So, favorite moment this week in Veep. I loved the Jeffersons deciding what should be cut. someone proposes aid to Israel, which prompts Jew in training Jonah to say, "Are you crazy?" And then someone pipes up with cutting aid for veterans, and everyone is all in favor. because yeah, fuck them. They volunteered.
Yeah, they knew what they were getting into.
Shane has stepped out, so he's not going to jump in here anytime soon. But
okay, I'm going to add on to Jonah and the Jeffersons here when he's giving a speech in the last credits of the show that I missed for the first five seasons. He talks about we're going to shut down the government and restart it like a router.
I'm sure a statement like that kills or explodes several blood vessels in like Kent's brain.
Right. That was a really good tech shout out right there.
If Shane was with us, I would talk about what the fuck is his name? Chong, the character in the first several episodes of the show, played by Randall Park. I love that Veep does not tiptoe around veterans. And with jokes like cutting aid for veterans because they volunteered, and making fun of Danny Chung for constantly talking about his harrowing military service, and just what a ploy that is on his part.
So we should table ripping on veterans for next week is what you're getting at here for Shane.
It's in the show. Okay. I'm sure it'll come up at some point. We'll be talking about Silicon Valley, and Shane will be like, you know who I don't like? Veterans. I'll probably cut that out.
Yeah, it's probably good. The other good thing while we're being politically correct here is to talk about when they're talking about naming their baby. Mm-hmm. And they are saying he, she, instead of
is her, so on and is so forth. Her,
and the phrase bicurious Porky Pig comes out of Selena's mouth. That was quite a line.
And the names that they have cited for themselves, Leslie and Dana, if it's a boy, and Linus, if it's a girl.
And everyone is very upset with Linus. Yeah,
everyone's faces are curdling. I feel like even Richard would have something to say about that.
We didn't get a lot of Richard in this episode.
We did not. He might have been just around for that one scene, maybe?
I don't know. He had a down week last week. He sat the bench to recover this week.
He suggested inviting Jonah, and everyone laughed at him and didn't tell him and didn't explicitly say no. And I remember making a note of that because I felt like that was going to come up again in the episode, right. But it never did. I feel like he was just going to Jonah was going to show up there and Richard would have invited him. But it was better as it is, where Jonah shuts down the whole government because he doesn't get an invite to this unveiling that, again, had fun-sized Snickers and 2-liter sodas at it.
Right.
Again, Shane has stepped out, so we might be at an impasse as far as who we might have another time.
Oh, yeah. Who's your choice?
Veep. it's almost always going to be Veep for me. I am just so high on this show. I love its cynicism, especially viewed through the lens of the present day. I think it's never been more true. I don't mind how terrible Selena is. I think it's just such great satire. It's such perfect satire. It does not, as we mentioned, pull any punches at all from any corner. And I just have a lot of admiration for it. And that continues with this week.
I'm going to go, because I had to change my whole worldview to watch, to tolerate, I guess, Veep, that I thought Silicon Valley was really good this week. And if we want to break the tie, I asked Chelsea beforehand. And she said, I actually chuckled a few times at Silicon Valley this week.
I accept the ruling. I'm fine with that. So Silicon Valley wins the week. Once again, we have to tinker a little bit with how we decide that. But I'm totally fine with it. I think that, yeah, good job. Good job.
Yeah, because she's usually reading when I'm watching Silicon Valley, and she'll watch Veep with me. But it was like funny enough for her to pull the book away and watch for a little bit, and that's a sign of a quality episode.
All right, yeah, we all have our barometers. Real quick, Brian, have you been watching anything you wanna throw out there?
We watched Moana and Frozen on the way to and from Chicago with the kids, so I listened to it while I'm driving. And I'm trying to finish Broadcast News. It's a weird show. Really weird.
It's dense. It's a very dense movie. There's a lot of ideas happening in Broadcast News. And the
characters are like, they pop up with ideas like out of nowhere. It's like they'll be heading one way and then totally turn around with a different thought and change their mood and everything. It's very strange.
We look forward to the review of that coming soon to MediaCommunity.club. At this moment, we're talking about Sunset Boulevard, but Broadcast News is up next. I expect that any day
now. Did you watch Sunset Boulevard?
I just wrote a review for it a couple days ago.
I watched like 5 minutes and fell asleep. I should probably take that up again.
I mean, 1950. It's just a whole different like cinematic language. Right. And like English language. Like they just speak differently then. Like they just have that very like old-timey black and white film noir way of talking in movies that they don't use anymore. It sounds so much more naturalistic now. I get it. That'll do it for this episode of the Community Movie Club podcast. Check us out on the internet at MediaCanMovie.club. As I mentioned, we're talking about Sunset Boulevard, seem to be broadcast news. We've also got reviews of movies, of 2016 movies in our side pieces tab, like Finding Dory, like Other People, available. Both of those are available on Netflix, and both very much worth a watch.
Have you guys been wire potting?
We were all set to do one on Tuesday, but JR fell asleep, and we're going to pencil it in for next Tuesday. we'll be back next week with another episode of Silicon VP / VPC. And check us out on iTunes. 5-star reviews there are very helpful. Click on our link on our webpage for Amazon and continue to and proceed to buy whatever you're going to buy on Amazon. And it costs you nothing. We get a sweet little kickback that allows Brian, our CFO, to work his magic, which is greatly appreciated. And that'll do us for this episode. Thank you for joining me tonight, Brian.
It's been a pleasure. See ya.
Have a good night.